If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Tell me if I get this wrong, guys, but over half of the online pharmacies are illegal pharmacies. Is that correct?
So the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy has vetted online pharmacies, I don't know, for 10 or 15 years. They have found that 95% of the online pharmacies marketing to the United States are operating illegally. 95%.
Wow.
So the very easy clue, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see this. If you go online to www.cheapmedicine.com and they tell you the medicine's coming from Turkey, India, Canada, it's illegal. Medicine cannot be brought to the United States. It is unapproved and it's branded, period. Let alone, who knows what's in it? Who knows what the efficacy is? Nobody. So I don't want to promote online medicine. Very simply said, if you go to CVS.com, you have a prescription, right? They have medicine. There are online sellers in the United States that are approved. On safe.pharmacy, there's also a list of pharmacies that are legal, online pharmacies, sellers that are legal. So choose one of those.
Yep. I'm Steve Murphy, DEA Special Agent retired and now host of the Game of Crimes podcast. If you've seen the Netflix series Narcos, then you know my story. I now bring you stories of heroism and bravery from our law enforcement and military heroes and occasionally from the criminals that they faced. Welcome to Game of Crimes. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's edition of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. I'm just laughing, excited, just like every week, because the guests I bring on here, I've got two of my oldest friends with me today. We've been talking about doing this interview for, gosh, months, if not years. Finally got everybody on everybody's schedule, and actually they've been patient with me because, you know, it's getting to where I can't do two things at one time anymore. But our first guest spent about approximately 15 years in law enforcement. He was a San Diego police officer, and then he came over to DEA where he got a real job. And I tell you what, when this guy was stationed in Mexico, was when Javier and I were stationed in Bogota. We were collecting leads off of wiretaps from the Colombian National Police related to Mexico, and this is the man we fed the leads to. They were up there kicking butts and taking names like you wouldn't believe. They made it look like me and Javier were just at the country club out at the Club Med every weekend, not doing anything. This man faced dangers that you only read about in fiction movies and books. I mean, he's a stud. He's came out of the law enforcement days, and he worked corporate security for several large companies. We're not going to mention them. One company, he was the executive director of brand protection. So that's a pharmaceutical. We're going to get into all of that. Now he's a consultant, and he's also a keynote speaker on counterfeit medications, on global supply chain, blockchain, traceability tools. I don't even know what the heck that is. And he's a former guest here on the Game of Crimes, Aaron Graham, episode 34 from January 2022. We hadn't even been running a year yet. So that's our first guest. Second guest is a man that I worked for personally. He was a DEA agent for about 28 years. When I first met him, he was an assistant special agent in charge in the Special Operations Division. So I worked for him there as a staff coordinator. He got promoted on up, went back to New York because he doesn't talk like me. I'm telling you that right now. Neither one of these guys do. But I'm working with him. So be patient with him, if you will. He went up there as an associate SAC of the New York Drug Enforcement Task Force, the oldest drug task force in the United States. I mean, that's an honor to hold that position, which his father held before him. So that's pretty cool. Later, he gets promoted up to Special Agent Charge, comes back to the Special Operations Division and ran that for about 10 years. At one point, I was his executive assistant. Now, you talk about a story of North meets South. That was it. And as I like to say, lovingly refer to, my nickname from him was Butt Boy. Hey, Butt Boy, get introduced. Actually, the name he had for me, I can't repeat on here because I try not to drop the F-bomb, but that's our secret. And then he retires from DEA. He gets a job with a company called PenLink, who is just a fantastic company. And you know what? Somebody called him back to service, and he accepted that call. He stepped up to the plate when his government called. He did the right thing. He's on Team America, and he became the acting administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration. That didn't last too long. I don't know who he ticked off, but he jumped out of that position, went back to Penn Lake. He's now a senior vice president. And I hope you guys are not hearing that lawnmower because they just decided to cut my grass while we're recording here. At Penn Lake, they do digital intelligence, data analytics, and modern surveillance challenges. This man is also a keynote speaker. If you've heard anything about fentanyl, he is one of the most outspoken voices on fentanyl in the world. And his name is Derek Maltz. He was here on episode 71, which is October 2022. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me again here on Game of Crimes.
Crazy to be back.
Thanks, Murph.
And will y'all try and contain your enthusiasm there a little bit, would you?
Thanks, Murph.
That's better. Did I miss anything? Did I touch on everything you guys want me to touch on?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to get right into this because our topic today, if you haven't figured it out, is going to be counterfeit medications and fentanyl. This is something we hear about all the time. We didn't hear about it. Thanks to Aaron, he brought light to this years ago. He got Javier and I involved with a group, Partnership for Safe Medicines, gave us the opportunity to speak twice on Capitol Hill, first to the House side, then that second time to the Senate side. We got to speak in front of the Legislative Exchange Conference, the ALEC Conference down in Texas, to legislators from all 50 states to talk about counterfeit medications. And you know what? I believe that was in 2018, that time period. Most of those people didn't have a freaking clue what we were talking about. We were shocked. They were shocked. We were shocked. And I'm thinking, you're the people that create the laws to help protect us Americans from this stuff. So let me just say this because I'm rambling. I'm going to hold off on the stats because I got a feeling you guys are going to talk about that. But let's just jump into Derek. I've heard you say that fentanyl isn't a drug. It's a poison. Can you explain that to those of us that don't understand what you mean by that?
Yeah, we've been saying that for many years now, because when I ran the Special Operations Division, I watched the growth of the Chinese criminal networks in getting involved with synthetic drugs. In my little world, I mean, obviously the Chinese networks have been providing the precursors for methamphetamine for many, many years, 30, 40, 50 years to the cartel. So they had a business relationship. Where it started to get very interesting to me is when they started bombing America with K2 spice and bath salts, the captenones and the different types of synthetic drugs they were making in the labs in China. But really what blew me away, Murph, was around 2012 when we started seeing lots of deaths in America in the Northeast and the Southeast that were first reported as heroin overdose deaths. And then when the autopsies came back, it was illicit fentanyl. Now, that was 2012. This just didn't happen just yesterday. Unfortunately, even in 2014, we had a briefing to the former attorney general from the DEA to warn them about this perfect storm of death and destruction coming to America because the Chinese criminals started working closely with the Mexican cartels. Now, one thing I want to tell you real quick is that in 2006, 2005, a lot of people don't know this. There was many deaths in America from illicit fentanyl that was coming out of Mexico. So the DEA in Chicago worked with the different counterparts and they got to a lab in Tulum, Mexico, I think that's the town. And they actually shut down the lab and they kind of like curtailed the deaths in America from the illicit fentanyl. We didn't see illicit fentanyl again until like 2012, but then it just kept escalating. The number one thing I want to say about this, which pissed me off, and to this day, I'm still very obsessed with this, is that I work with the families all over the country. And the vast majority, almost every family member told me they never heard of fentanyl. So the U.S. government failed miserably in never even telling the public what the hell illicit fentanyl was. So it became just this catastrophic, you know, thing that was growing every year and no one was talking about it nationally. So I stepped up eventually and got out there and started raising some hell.
And that you did. So Aaron, counterfeit pills, is that essentially turning, what, medicine into poison? Is that what we're talking about?
It is, Murph. And you know what's interesting? The reason I asked you and Javier to come to Congress, because they had no idea. And here we were. But now, because of the reputation you gained through Narcos on Netflix, they would listen to you. They were all fanboys. So we could get their attention. the reason I'm excited to be here with Derek is, yes, we saw fentanyl, but people underestimate the cartel's creativity, cleverness, how quickly they can act. When DEA started clamping down on pill mills and bad doctors and what have you from all the bad drugs they were putting out on the street, the people they were overdosing, immediately the new generation Jalisco cartel and the Sinaloa cartel started making counterfeit medicines, branded medicines, with fentanyl. And so now we had, as Derek mentioned, we had the Chinese joining forces with the Mexican cartels, stamping out these pills with the fentanyl in them. And I also agree, you remember, Murph, when we met Carrie Luther, Tasha's mom, at one of those hearings.
Yep.
First time I ever heard of somebody dying from fentanyl and what have you. And he'd taken a quarter of a Xanax, 17 micrograms of fentanyl. Coroner said he was dead within 30 seconds. And a friend gave it to him because he had hives. And he was trying to sleep, kept scratching, itching, was not a drug addict, and died. What we see now, and what's so amazing, and I agree with Derek 100%, if we don't tell the public what the issue is, they can't avoid the issue. So now we've got a counterfeit medicine issue valued at $4.5 billion globally. And back in the day, it was Viagra, Cialis, what have you, but now it's cancer, HIV, oncology, diabetes, Ozempic. Everything's being counterfeited, same cartels, China to Mexico, Mexico to the United States. But when I saw the fentanyl thing blowing up and I saw Derek on social media all over the planet doing the most important thing I think we can do, and he said it, we got to tell people what the issue looks like so they can drive around the issue and avoid the issue.
Absolutely. Derek, tell us, how much fentanyl does it take to result in an overdose death? Approximately.
Well, again, I'm not a doctor, but they say 2 milligrams of fentanyl, if it's like pure fentanyl, it will kill you. And obviously, we've learned a lot over the years because I used to do basic math. I'm a New York guy, Murph. I'm not that bright, but I would say, hey, 1 kilogram could kill potentially 500,000 people. Well, if you do the math, that's true. But over the years, as DEA started getting much better at it and they had the forensic lab personnel do a really extensive analysis of all these pills and what the purity was, they came up with their own methodology, which, by the way, the Washington Post actually challenged the DEA's methodology, saying that they were exaggerating. And there is an article where the same Washington Post reporter ultimately thanked the DEA that their methodology was actually proven to be reliable. So, as you know, it varies based on the purity that's in the particular, you know, substances, but it's very dangerous. But, you know, from my perspective, America is so slow in responding. Now that we're finally talking about fentanyl at a national level, we have all these other much more dangerous synthetic drugs that are in the pills, like carfentanil and nitazine, isoniazid, metronidazine, protonidazine, metomidine, xylazine. It's all this crazy stuff that's being made in these foreign labs that's penetrating our country and our communities and killing our future generation. What's really sad about it, and I didn't go to MIT, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I'm a common sense guy like you guys. And you look at the unrestricted warfare doctrine of the Chinese Communist Party, and you look at, this is a great strategic plan for them. They're killing off Americans. Yep. They're killing off the younger generation. They're taking advantage of depression and anxiety in America, which is like an all-time high now. And they're actually destroying our families all over the place. And we, as a country, are not putting the pieces together because people don't understand it. And it's become political, which you've heard me say repeatedly. It's not a red or a blue issue. It's a red, white, and blue issue. All Americans should care. All Americans should unite because it's killing all Americans. The problem is nobody wanted to talk about it during the last administration because it was coming over the wide open border. And the Chinese Communist Party were involved. Those are two very, very tough political issues for anyone to talk about. So it's just really like a runaway train now. And we're just, it's really sad to watch the greatest country in the world just finally catching up to fentanyl, right? And now we're already seeing a decrease in fentanyl production and seizures at the border, for example. And they're already on to this stuff. Murph, one last thing. I'll turn it back over to you for Aaron, but just imagine this shit. There were 628,000 fake pills of carfentanil seized in Los Angeles in November of 2025. The national news didn't even talk about it. And carfentanil is 100 times more potent than fentanyl. Think about that one.
Outrageous. outrageous. And the folks here on the show hear me talk repeatedly. Don't believe what we say here on the show. Go check us out. God gave you all a brain. Do your research on whatever topic it is, and you decide what you believe. Don't let the media tell you what to believe, and don't let the politicians tell you what to believe. But before I let you go, Derek, on that one, just what does 2 milligrams of fentanyl, what does it actually look like? How much?
It's like a couple of drops of salt. So take a salt shaker, put it in your hand. By the way, hold on a second. I hope I have it handy. I want to show you something. If I could find it under my desk here, I may not have it right now. Anyway, I used to go around early on because people like visuals. So I take my little salt shaker. I put 30 grams of salt in it and I hold it up on TV. I would take a bag with 300 grams of salt, which was only like this much salt. And at the time, based on the 1 kilogram can kill 500,000 people, we're talking about wiping out hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions of people potentially. But now, you know, like they have, like I said before, they have looked at this closely and have determined, like, for example, last year, the DEA seized enough fentanyl. They claim that could have killed, like they had 360 million dosage units of deadly fentanyl potentially. So, yeah, so it's really scary and it's a poison. It's not an overdose. I mean, these kids are being deceived to death. Let's make sure that's clear. And it's such a brilliant strategy by the criminals. They realize that the kids are a little depressed. They're on social media. They're a little bit anxious after COVID, social isolation. The world is crazier by the day. They're watching families split up. They're watching divorces and financial catastrophes. So the kids are very nervous. They see all these school shootings, right? So they go to school petrified. So then their buddies convince them to take these pills to make them feel better. And maybe the first couple of pills, they feel better. And then all of a sudden they're getting a bad pill and they're dead. And the families are finding them dead. So it's really, really an unbelievable trend that we've seen evolving. But again, if you go back to the 2007 seizure of $207 million in cash down in Mexico City by the Chinese chemical broker, and you look at that picture, because I have it right on my desktop right now, it gives you an idea of the volume of money that these chemical brokers, this was one Chinese chemical broker in 2007, 19 years ago. It's like the largest cash seizure in the world that I ever heard of. And by the way, if I may say this, if they declared $207 million in Mexico, how much was really in the house? $300 million? Right? Let's be honest here when we say this stuff.
Well, what are you trying to say, Derek? I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, like that is a good indicator of how this business has grown and how much money the cartels have made. And they're super smart, taking advantage of the addiction in America.
Yeah. So, Aaron, we keep saying counterfeit medications. What does that mean? What's a counterfeit medication?
Well, let me go back to something Derek said first, if I may, please. When he talks about the Chinese doctrine of unrestricted warfare, other people refer to it as asymmetric warfare. And so for people who don't understand the concept, it's really like the little guy can't compete with the big guy in traditional war tactics. So they take a different approach. So think about just what Derek said. They're trying to subvert the economy, subvert the health and well-being of Americans throughout the country through chemical poisonings. So then, for the last 10 years, we were probably seizing, 5 to 25 million dosage units of counterfeit medicines across the country, mostly in Hispanic communities, in bodegas, yerberias, flea markets, every day. And when we did the chemical testing on the medicines, there was a point where, look, resources are stretched. We know that at every level. Initially, the cops would say, look, really, it's not my job to protect pharmaceuticals' big profit margins. Let me know if it's dangerous, otherwise stop bugging me. We started doing chemical testing through Raman spectrometry, and we found chemicals like hydrogen peroxide, thallium, heavy metals, ethylene glycol, in children's cough syrup, in principally Hispanic communities. And we're seizing 1 million dosage units on every search warrant, 100 search warrants a year. So the numbers were crazy. Then we see the Mexican cartels doing the same thing. I have an informant right now, I won't say in what state, but he was an informant for me at DEA when I was in Tucson. I pulled him back into service like DEA did with Derek. I said, dude, I need help. You're the guy. Help me out here. So he starts talking to his sources, and we ran tons and tons of coke through him in the United States. Very credible. He says, dude, the guys I'm talking to right now in the cartels, in particular the Gulf cartel, they're saying, you know what? We're making a lot of money selling counterfeit medicines. Children's cough syrup. Diabetes is the big one today. So all the diabetes medicines we read, the GLP-1s, they're counterfeit. One of the worst examples, Ozempic, they're filling the vials with insulin. You give a diabetic a maxi shot of insulin, say goodnight. And that's what we're seeing. They're idiots, the bad guys. But now the question I always say, is it incompetence or intent? Today it's incompetence. That's fine. Except that the poison they're putting in the pills will kill people. We have 12-month-old infant Hispanic children in these communities taking hydrogen peroxide down their throat, right? Works great if you want to be a blonde, but not so good for cough syrup. They're ingesting this every day. Now we have this vulnerable community who has the lowest access to healthcare insurance in the country, also the number one target of the cartels for counterfeit medicines. Now, what happens when incompetence becomes intent and it becomes this unrestricted warfare? We can kill millions of people in the United States with the stuff we're already sending across the border every day. See, I'm old, kind of like you guys. I remember the Tylenol tamperings. 7 people died in Chicago. How many people got arrested for those tamperings? 0. Nobody got arrested for murder. Well, if they could do that, if we're not stopping the counterfeit medicines coming across the border wholesale, and we're seizing 10, 20, 30 million dosage units a year, how many is in the country? These were targeted seizures, targeted raids. How much is in the country? How many Hispanics don't have access to healthcare? Too many. And they're taking this medicine. What happens when, to Derek's point, they'd say, you know what? Unrestricted warfare. We can't beat them on the ground face to face. We're going to start sending poison across the border in a different way. Fentanyl is killing 100,000 people a year. The difference might be they were looking for coke, heroin, meth. Doesn't mean they deserve it, but they were seeking it. We have people now trying to buy a diabetes medicine or a cough syrup or an over-the-counter analgesic, and they're getting dangerous medicine. If they convert to unrestricted warfare, and that's what my informants tell me, that these guys have had enough. They're about to send a lethal dose of children's cough syrup across the border, millions of dosage units. So like you guys, people ask me, what do you worry about when you sleep? When you sleep, what are you worried about? I'm worried about waking up and open the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, whatever paper. 23 kids dead in LA, 16 kids dead in Tucson, 14 kids dead in Austin. All Hispanic. Nobody knows why they died. No explanation. And Derek knows how long it took before the coroners could identify fentanyl, not heroin, not something else.
Right.
We have a friend, you met her. Her sister died. She came home from church. Sister was unconscious, took her to the hospital. 38 years old, no drugs, no alcohol, no issue, underlying conditions, dead. I have the actual autopsy, no known cause. Well, she'd gotten injections of 2 counterfeit medicines earlier that day, died that night. Mm. But the autopsy's not looking for that. They don't know what's in it. And that was an accident. That was incompetence. But when that becomes intentional, now we have unrestricted warfare on a very scary level. That's exactly what Derek said. And now my informant says the cartels are talking about doing that on purpose. That's going to be a dangerous day in America.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I remember when you first told me about the children's cough syrup coming across the border, I just thought, how evil can they be? When, I mean, that's a great description right there. So, Derek, this is one thing I try to explain to people because they always ask me, and I'm not sure I always get this right. Why are these Mexican dealers, why do they want to kill their own customers with fentanyl and more stringent, more stronger variants of that?
So a couple of things. I get asked that a lot too, and it's a good question for people that don't know the behavior of the cartels. First of all, they don't care about their customer. That's number one. They care about maximizing the profits. When fentanyl was first pushed into America, they were making so much money, they just kept cranking it out in Mexico. They didn't care who ultimately was taking it. They just saw the profit that they were making. On top of that, keep in mind, at the height of the fentanyl crisis is when the border was wide open for 4 years. So then they were making billions of dollars on the human trafficking and other types of criminal activity, right? Because they controlled everything that was flowing north and south over the border. So it's the cost of doing business, unfortunately. It's kind of like when they lose like a ton of cocaine. They don't miss a beat. They just go ahead and they produce more and they get it out. If they kill 100, 200, 500, 1,000, no big deal to them because they have so much of this product available, then it just continues to, you know, bring revenue in. Now, the price now is way down, so their profits on fentanyl are just not what they were. So that's why they're sending massive ton quantities to Europe and to New Zealand and to Australia of cocaine, because cocaine is at an all-time high with the coca production in South America, right, in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have methamphetamine, which literally is exploding. So I track this stuff every week. And as just as an example, right, we had in Phoenix, right, 1,750 pounds of meth not too long ago seized. In California, they had a record amount of meth, 2,700 pounds. That just happened, one of the largest in the history. It was like a lab. They seized 2,000 pounds of meth heading to Dallas just last month by DPS. Another 1,000 in Houston, another 1,000 in Atlanta. Atlanta's been hitting meth like every month, it seems like they're hitting these massive loads. So meth is booming. So they're making up for the lost revenue from fentanyl with meth. Now they're mixing in these other types of substances in pills. They're experimenting. It's a Fortune 500 company. They're going to figure it out. That's why I've been calling for the annihilation of the cartels. Use the kinetic strikes, not just against the drug boats, but against the labs. They're producing poisonous substances that are killing Americans. So let me show you something real quick here. And I could send you this so you can have it for your podcast. This is the project I work on with the families. This is the babies that are dying. These are under one. Okay. These aren't like, if you look over my shoulder, which you can't see, I got the little baby from New York. He went to daycare, Nicholas, a 1-year-old Dominican boy, beautiful kid. And he died in a daycare center because these savages were selling fentanyl in a daycare center. And the story behind that one is Nicholas went down along with three other babies. And the lady who was running the daycare center, instead of calling 911, she called her husband to get the stash out of the place. And we got him on the Ring camera, leaving with bags of fentanyl. And then they got him in Sinaloa, Mexico, because it was great work with the state and local, the DEA, NYPD, and the folks in Mexico. But so when people want to know why I get so passionate, why the hell do I got to walk around at rallies with a T-shirt with the babies? Because the parents are sending me the babies. Like, this is real. This is not like make-believe, right, for the guests out there. That's because there's a deliberate attack against our citizens. We are in a chemical war. I'm not some lunatic just saying this. Like, let's use the basic brain. They're making chemicals in these clandestine labs in China, for example. They're making chemicals in these labs in the jungles of Mexico. And they're sending this stuff and flooding the communities at record levels, and we're seeing babies die. We've never had Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah or ISIS kill this amount of people, and especially babies. So when anyone in this country questions why this president declared the cartels as terrorists, well, I would just ask him a simple question. What other terrorist organization? Add them all up. Put them all in one pile. They wouldn't even come close to 1 year of the deaths caused by these chemical substances. So yes, it is a chemical weapon. And that's why Jim Rao, the father I work with very closely, who started, you know, Families Against Fentanyl, was screaming from the rooftop for years to declare fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Now, many in Washington would say, oh my God, it's a drug. It's not a weapon of mass destruction. Oh yeah? How many people has it killed? So it's being used as a weapon of mass destruction. And shame on America and all the leaders that never really spoke out about this until it became politically popular. Right now, they want to talk about it. They want to take pictures with, like you see these congressmen and women that take pictures with the families and stuff. I was throwing my collages up in the sky in Congress to get them to wake up. I was sending them on a PDF I made, 25 collages, 90 dead Americans on each collage. That's what started the collage project madness, because I motivated all these families to start making their own beautiful collages, which you see behind me. Mine were just kind of put together quickly just to get the point out there. Now you have the DEA took it to a whole new level. They took the original collage project and they put up the faces of fentanyl exhibit. It's beautiful. But unfortunately, they can't even accommodate all the photos that they get from the families. So they had to create a virtual wall now. They have no more wall space for the dead kids. So yeah, the country's under attack and Americans are not really paying attention because they take that attitude. Oh, my kid's a good kid. He plays sports. She plays sports. She goes to an Ivy League school. I don't have to worry about that. Well, yes, you do, because they're making fake Adderall pills that contain mass amounts of meth that have cross-contamination of fentanyl. So yeah, you do have to worry about that because kids use Adderall in college and they don't know what they're getting. So it's a really bad situation, but I you know me, Murph, I get cranked up. And this is a topic because we're seeing the kids, we're losing kids at record levels. And I have a problem with that. I have kids, grandkids, like as you guys do. And we just got to keep pushing the message out. So I appreciate you bringing this up again. Well, one thing I will say to preface what Aaron said, the other thing we don't like to talk about is this American cartel, right? So this book, I helped these Washington Post writers a little bit with this book, because what we don't talk about, the study that they did showed that 100 billion opioids were sent from legitimate pharmaceutical companies into America, like oxycodone and hydrocodone, for a period of 10 years, 9 or 10 years. I forgot the time frame. I think it was 2006, 2014. And we had so many people in America addicted because the doctors were overprescribing. The pharmacies just kept filling the orders, the manufacturers and distributors. It was like this frenzy, and nobody in the Department of Justice wanted to step up and stop the madness. Now, when we were at Agent Academy, one thing I remember, we were taught if you want to shut down the drug problem, you got to work from the bottom to the top and you take them all out, right? The source of supply was the goal for any good DEA agent or drug investigator. Am I wrong?
Right. No, you're okay. Right.
So why then, when we identified the source of supplies in the pharmaceutical craziness, why did DOJ not allow us to prosecute these major manufacturers? And you know what it is, Murph? It's all about the money.
Isn't it always?
It always comes back to it's all about the money. And obviously, Aaron, in his experience working in the pharmaceutical industry, could probably spin my head with stories. But from a high level, that is the madness that started cranking up the desire to use these kind of substances, the legitimate pharmaceutical industry. So that's something that people don't want to talk about that much, Murph.
Yeah. So, and I can't believe that you'd ever get fired up about anything. As long as I've known you, I've never seen that, except on a daily basis.
But you know what's great? You know what's great about it? I've been screaming for 10 years. Nobody's talking about fentanyl. Nobody's talking about it publicly. So with Derek, we got a force multiplier. He might be one body, but he's got like the voice of 10 people. Yeah. So in my mind, we have 10 people out there. And of course, he's pretty mild tempered, right? Very quiet, soft-spoken guy. He has to work on that. But I just, every time I open my social media, which is new to me, right? I can barely turn it on, but he's there. And I just think it's so important. And when I talk to the families, moms and dads who lost children to fentanyl, I didn't know. I had no idea. I would have talked to my child about it. Very sincere. And you know, the other thing, we talk about the sociology, and Derek has kind of talked all around this. When we were baby cops on the street, when somebody died of heroin, what color were they? Black. Mm-hmm. When somebody died of meth, what color? Black. So the focus on that was, well, it is what it is. Nobody said it, but nobody's focused on it. Now, all of a sudden, you got a bunch of white kids whose dads are titans in industry and professors and CEOs. Now, all of a sudden, it's a crisis. So that, for me, that was one of the big hypocrisy nails hit me right in the eye was seriously. And I grew up in a Hispanic community in San Diego. That's my family. We're watching them die. Nobody seemed concerned. 83, 84, 85, went out on the streets of San Diego. I roll up on a guy with a needle in his arm. Nobody cared to come up, scoop him up. I'm like, seriously? Who sold the heroin? Where did that come from? Who is this kid? Who's he talked to? Are we talking to his family? No, he's dead. Seriously? Because there's going to be another one in 10 minutes because he's dead. So is the next one. It's kind of like the three of us share a brain here. You asked the question of Derek. He answered it about why do the bad guys want to kill their customers? And if you remember, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, you and Javier asked me to come to a NADI meeting in Savannah to join you guys. And you were nice enough to introduce me as one of your old partners from Mexico. So at the break, these two detectives came up to us. Hey, we want to share something with you because we're not sure what to do with it. We want the word to get out there. I said, what's up? He says, we got a fentanyl trafficker here in Savannah. We have a wiretap. And the guy just emailed his source. They're trapping his email to email the source. Dude, we're losing sales all over Savannah. The stuff is no good. It's not strong enough. They want stronger pills, more fentanyl. His Chinese source says, okay, great. I'll send you more stuff. So stronger stuff. Next email, It's in the mail. Next email, you should be receiving it anytime. Next email is the bad guy in Savannah sending a note to his source saying, dude, my customers are dying all over Savannah. And the Chinese guy says, oh, I guess I made it too strong. You guess you made it too strong. So it wasn't intentional yet, right? But it was still, they don't mean to kill their customers. They have no idea what they're doing. But this accidental is still results in a dead person. And it's a drug poisoning, as Derek says. And I correct people every day to the point where my wife's annoyed with me for doing it. But it's not an overdose. An overdose is when you take too much of something you've been taking for some time. Drug poisoning is when you take a little bit of something and you're opiate naive. You've never taken that before. And boom, you're dead. So I think it's really important for people to understand these guys don't know what they're doing. But again, I bring it back to this unrestricted warfare, asymmetric warfare. They do know how to do it. They can double the potency of this stuff any day. And today is instead of pull the trigger on that.
So Murph, one thing I say a lot, and this is true, it's that like Iran uses Hamas and Hezbollah as the proxies to do the dirty work, right? So in my humble opinion, from all the years of watching this grow, the Chinese criminal networks use the Mexican cartels as the proxies to kill Americans. It's pretty simple in my brain, and it's worked brilliantly, and it's shame on America for taking so long to figure it out.
The other thing about that, Derek, sorry, when I was in Guadalajara, every time we would arrest a general or a comandante, we'd go in the office with the comandante to debrief. We see the uniform, the badge, the guns in the corner. We look over, and that's your partner. You got to be nice to him. They did arrest the guy, and we say something like, what's up with this? And they would always say, Aaron, if you guys weren't snorting this stuff as fast as a bad guy should get it to you, we wouldn't have this problem. So we all got to take accountability.
That's true. And that's why you've heard me recently like go crazy. And I'm going to a White House meeting soon to talk about this in more detail. But it's like we have this sense of urgency to destroy the cartels, which I'm all in favor of. But we're not even talking about the education of the kids. I've been literally for 5 years now saying, when are we going to get the influences that the kids are following? The Taylor Swifts of the world. I always call her out in a good way because she's got 300 million followers. So the kids, if they watch a 30-second like video reel that she does about the illicit drug supply, it's no joke. Matter of fact, a few years ago, there was three Kansas City Chiefs fans that froze to death in the backyard watching the playoff game, and it became a national news story. So I took that picture after I found out the autopsy results had, you know, cocaine with, you know, fentanyl in it. I actually sent a bunch of social media posts to Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, and Taylor Swift, kind of begging them to please step up and talk about this. I still try to recruit professional athletes to do this and celebrities. That's the only way the kids are going to learn. The kids are not watching mainstream media. They're not watching social. They're not watching the congressional hearings. They're not watching, you know, the cable news. They're watching video reels all day long. Everyone knows that. So why are we not teaching them where they're at? Like, am I missing something here? And I've been literally saying that forever. So I'm really working closely with Sarah Carter, the drug czar, and I'm trying to, and she's totally on board. It's just a matter of getting it done. Have a summit where we can better educate people in this industry that are really celebrities and influences with the kids. So let me tell you one funny story, because it's really funny. In my mind, it's funny. So I go to Dr. Phil and I do this thing with him. He was really good. He didn't know much about fentanyl. Now he's like really a big advocate. He cranked up Joe Rogan and others about this because he started to learn. So I said, Dr. Phil, I need to get video reels with celebrities and this and that. So he tries to do the right thing. He says, Derek, the next time you come, we're going to do a video reel. So I go to the studio, him and me and Dr. Phil do this reel. It's like 30 seconds. I was all pumped up. I have it on my phone. I show everyone, hey, Murph, check this reel out. I show my kids. Everyone thinks it's cool. There's only one problem. There's no kids in America following me and Dr. Phil. So no one's going to see it. So we got an A for effort. We got an F for delivery. And I feel bad saying that because he does have millions of followers, but his followers aren't the kids that are popping these pills and using these illicit drugs most of the time.
Yeah, but they are the parents of these kids.
That's right. They're the parents that should learn. You're 100% right, Murph. And that's true.
Hey, you heard that? He said Murph was right. Did you hear that?
No, Aaron? Murph, you're right once in a while. I can tell you that.
I'm writing it down. Murph was right.
I am impressed with your technology skills because you were a technology disaster when I used to know you.
Oh, I still am. That hasn't changed. I tell you what, and our listeners and viewers couldn't see it, but I was applauding quietly when you brought up education because that's the thing that Javier and I promote more than anything. You guys know the presentations we do. You've seen them before. We always do a Q&A at the end. And if we're on Fox or Newsmax or whatever media outlet will let us on and they give me an opportunity, I bring up education. Just today, this morning, I was sitting out on the patio talking to the wife, and we were talking about the same thing. And she said, I remember when our girls were young, and I'm going to guess elementary school, we didn't remember exactly, but she still has the paperwork that DARE gave them in school, and it was a questionnaire, and the kids, you know, fill in the blank questions of things that they'd learned from the professionals that were coming in, and they still remember that stuff. But yet we're not promoting education. And you guys, I don't think I've told you this story, but one of our granddaughters was here when she was about 4 years old, and here in Orlando, and we have a little lake behind the house here, and there's a Mr. Alligator comes around every once in a while and visits. He still does. He was just here last week for a few days. We now have a fence and other stuff up to protect us. But I'm standing with her on our patio looking down at the lake at the alligator. She's like, Mr. Alligator, you come up here. I'll poke you in the eye. I'll punch you in the nose. And just an innocent kid. And I said, baby, let me teach you about alligators. And so I started telling her about the dangers. And I said, all my kids and grandkids call me Pops. I said, if that alligator gets you or tries to get you, Pops will do everything he can to save you. The reality is I probably can't because they're that strong and they're that vicious. By the time I finished, she was in my arms saying, Pops, let's go inside. Okay. Now, I just scared the crap out of a four-year-old, right? You think she goes around alligators now? She learned. And I don't understand why we're not doing a better job of the education. And I'm sorry to go off tangent because this is y'all's story, not mine. But it's just kind of goes along with what we're talking about. Education has got to be one of our number one goals.
Well, and you know, Steve, you can't start too young. And I don't know what happened to DARE. My kids went through DARE. I'm sure DARE's kids went through DARE. I don't know where DARE is now. I dare somebody to tell me, like, what happened to those guys?
It's back.
It is back. Well, that's great news. But when you talk about when is it too early to start teaching these kids, we left Mexico. Our son Jack was probably not yet three. We're going to leave with a babysitter for the first time. He was a cool kid, very calm, typical firstborn boy child. And so it was fine. We get home. We ask the babysitter how to go. She says, well, it went fine. But there was something she wasn't saying. So my wife's like, fine, but, well, he wanted to play Legos. And my wife's saying, well, that seems normal. He likes Legos. And Karen says, okay, so did something happen? Well, kind of. And she says, so Karen says, what? He says, well, he built a house. They put a Legos around it. And he said, okay, so that's a stash house. You're the bad guy in the house. I'm the DEA SWAT agent that's coming to take the house down. Okay, well, that's education. At 3 years old, he knew drugs are bad. The police are coming. And, you know, whether it's Mr. Alligator or the guy in the stash house or you're the SWAT agent, we can teach these kids in a non-threatening, non-scary way that that's bad, it's dangerous. And by the grace of God, my kids are now 33 and 36. They're healthy. They don't do drugs. But, you know, to Derek's point, he's meeting with so many parents. I don't know how he does it. I still talk to Carrie once a month. I still get a tear every time I see something she posts about Tosh. And to your point, Derek, Tosh was a great student. He was an MVP of the high school baseball team. He was a poet. He wrote music. Everybody loved him. I've seen so many tributes to him from his nieces and nephews and friends. This kid was talented. And we lost him at age 27, 28 about that. Just no excuse for it. He didn't know. Okay, fine. He didn't know. But you know what else? The guy who gave him the stuff, bought it online, did not get prosecuted for homicide because he didn't know. I don't care if you knew the gun would shoot a bullet through a guy's heart. If you shot the gun through the heart, you go to jail, dude. So I think that's getting better now with these drug poisonings. And part of it is Derek screaming and yelling. This is a poisoning. This was intentional. They had knowledge and intent. They need to be charged with murder. And I hope that continues to happen.
Yeah. I was just looking up here while you're talking. The chairman of the board of directors for DARE is Michelle Linhart, our old DEA administrator.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, and that's another person. Guys, you live up to this. We all took an oath to protect our country and our citizens. And I came with this little corny saying that says, just because we retire does not mean that our oaths ever expire. And you guys are living proof of that, that you've been retired from law enforcement for a while now. Michelle's been retired. I've been retired. And we're still doing everything we can to help protect our citizens. So I just, when I call you guys heroes and studs, that's truly mean that. It's not just because we're friends. And I still got a buttload of questions here for you guys. So this is for Aaron. What percentage of Americans would be shocked to learn counterfeit drugs have already passed through legitimate pharmacies? Or do they pass through legitimate pharmacies?
Yeah, I think 99% of Americans will be shocked to learn that. You know, a few years ago, I did a Dateline episode with Chris Hansen on counterfeit pills. Won an Emmy. 2 days later, everybody was scared to death. Like, how do I know? Go to the pharmacy. How do I know? 2 days after that, there was some other crisis. Nobody knew about it. And today, because of the prevalence, and I'd say tell you something that nobody in America knows, except for a few people, Turkey is the number one source of counterfeit medicine being sold to America. Turkey. The President Erdogan is driving it all. I'm sure I'm bringing in an airstrike on myself right now, but somebody needs to call him out. And the fact is, he gets the lowest price, pays the lowest price for medicine in the world of any country. He diverts about a quarter of it. So they've established this legitimate internet sales of medicines from Turkey because they're cheap. And then what they've done is develop what I call the RX Trojan horse. Now there's a credibility with medicines from Turkey. They're low price. They're authentic. The next batch coming through is not authentic, but I've had a positive experience with medicines from Turkey. So I go online and I can choose Turkey, Australia, India, UK, Canada, the lowest price is Turkey. I've had a good experience with Turkey. I'm going to buy it from Turkey. And now they're counterfeit. And so nobody understands that. And so in the United States, we have this drug diversion issue where wholesalers buy a bunch of drugs, sell it out the back door to somebody else illegally. They do a phony paper trail. They sell it up the road. It goes fine. There's trust. Now what do? They sell counterfeits in that same supply chain channel, just like they did yesterday with authentic medicine. So we've seen Gilead had over $100 million of counterfeit HIV medicines in the legitimate supply chain in 2023 or four. $100 million, legitimate pharmacies. Patients were getting medicine, getting their HIV medicine that was not only was it not, it wasn't a diluted or weak or subtherapeutic dose. It wasn't even HIV medicine. It was something else altogether different for an HIV patient. You don't have to be without your medicines when you're on HIV very long before you get very sick in legitimate pharmacies. So it's a very serious issue.
It is. Are there licensed professionals that knowingly participate in these counterfeit drug distributions?
100%. And I think when I was after DEA, I went to FDA, OCI, Office of Criminal Investigations, and I ran the biggest undercover operation still to this day for FDA. And we call it Operation Gray Pill because it was in the gray market. I was buying medicines from legitimate wholesalers, selling them to licensed wholesalers who were then moving the product two or three times to hide the drug pedigree of the product and then selling it back into commerce. Those same guys I was selling to would say, hey, do you have any short dated medicine that you bought at discount because you're a closed door pharmacy? I can return it to the wholesaler at full cost. I said, how you can do that? He says, they don't know and they don't care. They're going to bill the manufacturer. So you had the wholesaler and the manufacturer sleeping through this, right? So I always say, it's not about what you knew, it's what you should have known, right? And at some point, I'm going to ask you, what did you know? When did you know about it? What have you done about it? And if we have 20 years of drug diversion happening every day, I want to know what you've done. You're well aware of it. And yet, they don't want to pull the trigger. So it is in our supply chain. It's in legitimate pharmacies through bad guys in the middle of the gray market every day.
I was a little bit shocked. I wasn't sure what you were going to say on that. I was a little bit shocked that you said yes, but I shouldn't be. Nothing should surprise us anymore. It's ridiculous what's going on. So this is a question for both of you, but I'll start with Derek. And this is one of my pet peeves is we kind of touched on it briefly, but are we really being honest about American demand being the real driver here? I mean, it seems like no one really wants to talk much about that. If the supply versus demand argument.
So, Murph, like I said, like I'm a big believer. I talk to a lot of the families I know, and I watch a lot of news, and I see how these kids are starting to really go downhill, unfortunately. I hate to say it, but, and so I'll give you a good example. So the Chinese criminal networks have also figured out how to really beat America by establishing all these marijuana grow operations all throughout the country, everywhere. In one story I was involved with, when they broke the news, there was 270 Chinese grow operations in the state of Maine alone. And the Daily Caller broke the story. And then, of course, you know, the reporter up in Maine did an amazing job. Steve Robinson, I think it is. Anyway, the thing is that they took advantage of the weakness of America. Like, people think marijuana is safe, no big deal, they can smoke the joint. And the Chinese, and not only are they making like very high THC marijuana, maybe 30% or more. I'm not a chemist, so I don't know exactly, but this is what I've heard. And they're spraying the plants with Chinese pesticides. Now, we all know that pesticides, generally, you're not supposed to be ingesting, like they cause cancer and all that stuff. What are these Chinese pesticides causing? So anyway, they start getting people turning to marijuana, and then their brains get fried, and then they're rushing to the emergency rooms, and they're seeing doctors, and they're getting diagnosed as having marijuana psychosis, marijuana schizophrenia, you know, depression, anxiety. Then they go home, and they're going to get a pill, and then they may die. And so we got this cycle of, again, this chemical attack on our country. And again, I'll say it again, shame on America for not putting the dots together, connecting the dots, because it's all the Chinese criminal networks and the chemicals in this unrestricted warfare. And so to answer your question, yeah, the American public is addicted to drugs. They're turning to drugs for help. They're not going to the parents. They're embarrassed to tell the story. They're not going to psychologists, a lot of them. They're afraid, the stigma of going to a shrink or whatever. They're going to the social media. By the way, that's another thing. If I'm a guy who's young, not very athletic, ugly, pimples on my face, and I'm on the social media sites all day long, and I'm seeing these beautiful kids, these athletes, and these superstars, I'm going to get depressed. It's like, it's common sense. So they turn to drugs for help. That's pretty straightforward. And what happens is they sometimes don't wake up. One of my strategies early on to try to get the message out to this America is I started getting my friends all over the media to tell their story. So I'd get called from a booker, a producer from some network. Hey, we want you on Thursday. No, I'm done talking about this. I'm going to get so-and-so on. They're going to tell you what happened to their kid. And once this started happening, the news network started realizing, wow, this is worse than we thought. No shit. We've been telling you that for years and you're not paying attention. So they started now reaching out to all these families. And a lot of my family friends that I worked with on the Collage Project and the rallies, I started getting them on the TV shows. And then people started realizing, oh my God, that's a nice family. That's a good kid. He was going to go to UCLA. He was going to go to Stanford. He was going to go to the Naval Academy. And now he's dead. And they started realizing, in line of what Aaron said before, it wasn't just like the inner city kids that are actually, you know, dying from this. It was, you know, all walks of life. And so, again, yes, the demand is out of control. And I have to say, even on this gun issue, right? So Mexico constantly says, Americans say that we're helping kill their kids. Well, what about all the guns that they're sending down to Mexico? Because the Mexicans are using all the U.S. guns to kill each other. They got a point. After a while, I started saying, you know, I that saying, right? If you live in a glass house, don't throw stones, right? So I'm out there criticizing Mexico for certain things, especially corruption. We're corrupt all over the place here. You see the fraud that's going on in this country with all the billions of dollars of fraud? And so bottom line is yes, Murph, you're correct. Demand is out of control. The mental illness is out of control. When's the last time you talked to somebody, Murph, where their kid was having some mental illness issues and what they've gone through, the hell that they've gone through with the addiction clinics or the mental illness services and the amount of cash they got to pay. And it's out of control and there's no control over it. And so until they get a grasp on that, this is just going to continue.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. Aaron, what's your thoughts?
So I'll build off of what Derek was just saying. We have all these kids who have serious psychological issues, right? They don't want to leave their computer. They don't want to leave the basement. They don't want to leave social media. They don't know how to interact with people. Then they end up with these issues. They start buying drugs online. Then if the parents do engage, let's get you some counseling. Let's get a prescription. Let's get the right medicine. But unfortunately, at the risk of being honest, like Derek is, you know, 100%
100% honest all the time at 140 miles an hour. Our healthcare system in America is broken. Medicine is expensive. People don't have access to prescription benefit plans. So when the family's engaged and they say, okay, Tony, we're going to get you the right medicine the doctor prescribed, they can't afford the medicine. Well, what happens now? They go online and they call Mr. Erdogan. Can I get some of this anti-anxiety medicine, some of this depression medicine, some of these other medicines? Because it's cheaper. We need to fix the healthcare system in America so people can afford the medicine that they've been prescribed. Because when they don't, they double down on bad. They're already sick. They took a step in the right direction. They got their parents on board. They went and saw a doctor. But now the medicine's $1,000 a month for a simple medicine. Now, I'm going somewhere else. Online, www.rxdrugtraffickers.com. Send me some medicine. Now they got it at a price they can afford. Now the kid wakes up dead. Okay, that's a bad outcome. It's a preventable outcome. We need to figure out how to make medicine affordable. And one of the things we've talked about before, Steve, and I've seen it happen, amazing success twice in like minutes. There's a program called AmericasMedicines.com, AmericasMedicines.com. It's what they call a patient assistance program. You go on there, you say, my doctor said I should take product X. I'm this old. I make this much money a year. I can't afford my medicine. Push the button. It takes you to the patient assistance program for the company that makes that medicine. More often than not, you qualify for free medicine from the manufacturer because of your income and your status. Which one of you have heard about AmericasMedicines.com? Nobody's heard about it. So we keep going online. It's just ridiculous. Also part of AmericasMedicines.com is other discount cards, programs where you can get medicine at a lower price. And then we can actually start to address the issue of people going online to drugaddicts.com distribution services and getting poisonous medicine. They can get their medicine either at a discounted price or an affordable price or for free. So first time we did a podcast together, Steve, I think it was the next day, you guys got an email from a listener and they said, you guys might have saved my cousin's life. He was about to buy a medicine from a website. We went to the safe.pharmacy website, National Association Boards of Pharmacy, safe.pharmacy. We put in the website we were going to buy it from and said, it's an illicit website pharmacy. Do not buy from this pharmacy. They were about to buy it because it was the best price. So you can buy medicine online, but if you're going to do so, go to safe.pharmacy, type in the name of the website. It will tell you tens of thousands of pharmacies in there registered. That's an illicit website or that's a legitimate pharmacy. Who knows about that? Nobody. A second occasion, Steve, I was in LA doing a training for about 500 police officers and prosecutors in the auditorium at LAPD. So I was the last speaker of the day. I talked about Safe Up Pharmacy, AmericasMedicine.com. The presentation is ending and people are coming up to the stage to talk about, you know, questions, what have you. And I see these two deputies coming up that I know quite well from LAPD, and one of them's in tears. And it was during COVID. They lost a few deputies. So I was like praying that we had not lost another deputy to COVID. And I said, are you guys okay? She says, one of the deputies says to me, you might have saved my sister's life. I said, what are you talking about? Because we all know when you save a life in our line of work, it's an awesome thing. Like, you can live for years and years on that, right? It makes you smile like that. Occasionally you want to smile. But I had no idea what she was talking about. I barely knew her. I certainly didn't know her sister. She says, when you said, go to AmericasMedicine.com, and you might be able to get your medicine for free. My sister had severe diabetes, type 2 diabetes. She was taking a medicine every other day because she couldn't afford it. From the time I mentioned that website to the time she came up to talk to me, her sister texted her, so the deputy texted her sister. In the interim, she comes up and says, in between the time you said it and me standing here, my sister just found out she qualifies for free medicine from the manufacturer for that medicine.
Wow.
Now she'll take it every day. I get goosebumps just sharing it again now. It's probably the 20th time I've said it, but nobody knows about it. That's why I'm so grateful to be on this podcast, because if every listener tells one person at the next cocktail party, bingo party, right, card game, whatever, tell one person, everybody thinks everybody has healthcare insurance. Everybody does not have healthcare insurance. Everybody does not have a prescription benefit plan that makes it affordable. People have to be aware of these programs or they're going to do silly things, not because they want to, not because they want to live dangerously, not because they're irresponsible. But I know I've done a lot of work in the Hispanic community
And people say, well, just tell them don't buy drugs in the flea market. If they're selling piñatas and that kind of stuff there, they probably are in pharmacy. Yeah, that's fine. But I know when people tell you not to do something, if you don't tell me how to do it safely, I'm going to go back to doing it that way because I need the medicine. I'm going to buy what I can afford right. and take my chance.
That's just like if you had a daughter who's going to get married. Hey, we got auto repair and wedding dresses in the back. Would you take her there to buy a wedding dress? I don't think so.
Right, right.
You mentioned a website there that's very important. It's safe, S-A-F-E, dot pharmacy. Okay, everybody, check that out. That's where you can find out about these illicit online pharmacies. We went through, I mean, you remember when we were doing that call-in program here in Florida years ago with Partnership for Safe Medicines, and the people were calling in and I mean, calling us everything but good people on the phone because we were trying to educate them about illegal online pharmacies at a time when our governor here, and I support his efforts. I think he had the right idea in mind. I just don't think that his advisors had given him the proper research to realize what he was telling the people of Florida he could do, you couldn't do. It was illegal. It was a federal violation. Plus, Canadian pharmacies are not going to give you access to their meds. That's what they have for their country. So it's all good. But that's really important. It's safe.pharmacy. Go on there and check it out. And just keep in mind, over half, and if tell me if I get this wrong, guys, but over half of the online pharmacies are illegal pharmacies. Is that correct?
So the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy has vetted online pharmacies, I don't know, for 10 or 15 years. They have found that 95% of the online pharmacies marketing to the United States are operating illegally. 95%.
Wow.
So the very easy clue, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see this. If you go online to www.cheapmedicine.com and they tell you the medicine's coming from Turkey, India, Canada, it's illegal. That medicine cannot be brought to the United States. It is unapproved and it's branded, period. Let alone, who knows what's in it? Who knows what the efficacy is? Nobody. So I don't want to promote online medicine, but very simply said, if you go to CVS.com, you have a prescription, right? They have medicine. There are online sellers in the United States that are approved. On safe.pharmacy, there's also a list of pharmacies that are legal, online pharmacies, sellers that are legal. So choose one of those.
Yep.
The challenge always comes down to, like Derek said earlier, it's all about the money. I said, it's all about the money. So yeah, I went to a legal pharmacy. It was $1,000. I went to the drug dealers. It's only $200. There's a reason for that.
All right. So guys, we've been going a little about an hour now. And ladies and gentlemen, Aaron and Derek have agreed to join us again tomorrow to continue this discussion. This is two of the most important topics we've ever had here on Game of Crime. So appreciate you sitting in with us today and listening. If you haven't seen the show yet on YouTube, do me a favor and go over and type in Game of Crimes podcast in the search bar on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button, watch some of the episodes, hit the like button, see the guests, meet the guests, and send me some of your comments. The good comments, not the nasty comments, okay? Yes, I read them. I know I'm not supposed to, but I can't help myself. And I probably won't respond. If I don't respond to you, it's probably an ugly comment, okay? But guys, thank you so much. It's truly an honor. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your willingness to come back again tomorrow.
Thanks, Chief.
Thank you.
All right. Everybody stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow.